Hello everyone, and welcome to an all new episode of Demimonde Paranormal. As usual, I'm your host, Tori, from Demimonde Paranormal on Facebook.com as well as here on Anchor. And tonight we have a very special episode for this Christmas Eve, this Friday Christmas Eve. I'm so glad you decided to join me. So I hope that Demimonde Paranormal serves us some comfort to you during this joyous holiday season and gives you the right amount of spooks and scares through all this glitz and glamour, red and gold. And it just reminds you of the chilly winter air just outside your door and the scary side of Christmas. Now, in today's episode, we will be talking about some spooky things, such as Krampus, or Frau Perchta, or many other characters that we're going to be talking about. And if you are interested, we also did another special episode for Christmas time last year, 2020. And if you would like to listen to that one before you listen to this one, or after this one, you're more than welcome to do so. In that one, however, we do go into more detail of the more sinister, dark side of Christmas folklore. And we also talk about the pagan Yuletide as well. Also, I wanted to make things a little bit different this year, so I just wanted to include some interesting and maybe kind of funny and, you know, whimsical aspects into this year's special Christmas Eve episode. So I hope you guys enjoy this podcast. And let's begin. Also, as I mentioned before, I will be including a personally written ghost story, a Christmas ghost story that I wrote myself. I hope you guys enjoy it. Aside from doing podcasts, I also like to write on my spare time. I've been writing for about 4 years, and I've got to say I quite enjoy it. I don't know if my content's actually any good, but it is quite a favorite pastime of mine, and I do enjoy it. So with that being said, let's dive right in. I wish each and every one of my listeners a happy and joyous holiday season and a very merry and bright new year, 2022. And that being said, let's get started into something you may know or something that might be very familiar to you, but you never knew the history behind it. We all know what Christmas tree ornaments are, but do we really know what they came from? Where they came from, and how they came about. Well, our first topic that we're going to be talking about is called witch balls. Now, a witch ball is a spherical, hollow shape of glass that was hung in cottage windows in England during both the 17th and the 18th century. Now, originally they were used to ward off evil spirits, witches, and spells, ill fortunes, or just plain bad, nasty spirits. Today even, witch balls are popularly used in Sussex, Eastern and Western Sussex in England. They may be hung in the eastern window by a cord, or they may be sitting atop a vase. Witch balls are usually either blue or green. The colors are used to entice the spirit and entrap them inside the ball. It was also thought that the witch balls were created to prevent witches from even entering the room, because it was believed that witches did not have a reflection, and obviously these witch balls had a mirror-like surface to them, since they were made of glass, and witches were not thought to have a reflection or Some believe that witches were repelled by their own reflection, their own ghastly reflection. Also, sometimes footballs were made out of not only glass, but sometimes they were made out of wood, twigs, or grass. And they came in other colors other than blue or green, but usually they were blue or green. The balls were also believed to have the power to avert the evil eye and protect the home's inhabitants and the home itself. The witch balls, much like today's Christmas tree ornaments, had deep holes at the top where a peg could be inserted into it. Then a cord was attached to said peg. Witch balls were hung in the chimneys of one's home, and sometimes they were even filled with either salt or holy water. The balls, which contained the salt, which was a precious commodity back in the day in the 17th century, if one of those balls were to break, it was considered bad luck. As I mentioned before, the modern-day Christmas tree ornament is thought to be the descendant of a witch ball. Ornaments, as they revolutionized, were originally hung on a Christmas tree to ward off jealousy of a visitor who may become jealous of the presence underneath the Christmas tree of one's home. Our next topic is somebody who's very famous, and in today's world it's growing even as famous as Santa Claus or Saint Nicholas himself. This devilish creature is Krampus. Krampus has been known to be the part of winter solstice and pagan rituals. According to legend, Krampus was the son of the Norse god Hel, the god of the underworld. Despite the Catholic Church trying to ban Krampus from the holiday, he eventually became associated with Christmas during the spread of Christianity. Now, on the night of the 5th of December, which is known as Krampus Night, he and St. Nicholas visited the children. But as St. Nicholas rewarded the good little boys and girls, Krampus would punish and terrorize the bad children. Krampus would beat the kids with sticks, or in some variations of the tales, he would eat them or even drag them to hell with them. On December 6th, known as St. Nicholas Day, the good children would awaken to see their shiny new gifts, and then the bad children would take this day to nurse their wounds, which was given to them by Krampus. Now, Krampus was thought to look like a half-goat, half-demon-looking creature, and his name derives from the German word Krampen, which means claw. I mean, come on now, can we think of a better fitting name? Krampus is thought to have originated in Germany, but he is also mentioned in Central Alpine Europe. Now, this includes Austria, Slovenia, and the Czech Republic, as well as Hungary. There are festivals fixated on Krampus. One especially is known as Krampus Run, which began in the late 20th century. It's quite popular in both Austria and Germany as a way to preserve culture. It includes people dressing up as Krampus himself and spooking spectators, and even sometimes chasing them. And it also has a great deal of alcohol involved. So people are getting drunk as heck and chasing people down the street, dressed up like Krampus. Could you imagine how frightening that would be if you did not expect that? Our next topic for tonight's Christmas Eve special episode is Frau Perchta. She is also known as the Belly Slitter, and she is similarly aforementioned. She's like Krampus, but she's technically way worse. The first known mention of Perchta was around 1200. And she is known as in both Alpine folklore, Germany and Austria. She carries a long knife underneath her skirts, and her nose is said to be hooked and made out of iron. She typically resembles an old crone carrying a cane, but she does way more than give a mighty good wallop to bad boys and little girls. See, she also dresses in old rags as well. But however, she's very concerned about domestic neatness and spinning, aka weaving. According to the tradition, not only does Frau Perchta punish children, but she will also punish young ladies who do not finish their weaving by the Epiphany, which is January 6th, which is also at the end of the 12 days of Christmas. Her punishments may include being stamped on by her big feet, or she may light your unspun fibers on fire. And to add to that, the worst is yet to come. She may also live up to her name and slit your belly open while you're asleep in your bedroom and take out your organs and replace those organs with pebbles and rocks and straw. Frau Perchta would even wander into homes between Christmas and the Epiphany each night, and she would know if the children and the young maidservants, were bad or good and if they worked very hard during the year. If they were good, they would find a silver coin in a shoe or a pail. But if they were bad, she would, as we mentioned before, slit their bellies open, remove their guts, and replace it with pebbles and straw. She would also do this if you ate something other than gruel or fish on the night of her feast day. Frau Perchta is also known to be associated with the Norse goddess Frigga. So what do you guys think of that one? Who would you rather deal with, Frau Perchta or Krampus? Personally, I think I'd rather deal with Krampus. And also, they've made many movies about Krampus. I mean, there was a film made in 2015. It's an American film. And I'm pretty sure it's called Krampus. It has Adam Scott in it. And it was about how this family gets visited by Krampus himself and wreaks a bunch of bloody havoc. If you guys haven't seen it, check it out. You may like it. I believe it's a dark comedy, I'm pretty sure. I saw it years ago, but I haven't seen it again. I only saw it once. But if you guys liked it, you know, drop a comment down below. Alright, on to the fourth topic. Now, this story is probably one of my favorite folktale stories having to do with Christmas time. And this is about the only time I like a spider, or I'm not afraid of a spider. This is a story that is found in both German and Ukrainian folklore. This is called the Christmas Spider. So this old piece of folklore is from Ukraine and Germany. The story of the Christmas Spider is one of the origins of how tinsel on Christmas tree became a real thing. In a quick summary of the story, a poor family has a Christmas tree, but they cannot afford decorations to put on it. So at night, while the family is asleep, another family, now this is a family of friendly spiders, decide to decorate this lovely pine with their silky webs. Now once they finished with their hard work, the spiders were overjoyed. They were like, oh yes, that looks so great, you're gonna love it, it looks so beautiful. However, according to the legend, when Santa Claus or Saint Nicholas or even baby Jesus found a tree covered in webs, he decided to turn the webs into silver strands. He didn't want the human family to find their beautiful Tannenbaum covered in dusty webs, but he knew how hard the spiders had put into the tree, what hard work the spiders had put into the tree. Now, some variants of the tale say that the spider webs were turned into either gold or silver. The story inspired long-standing traditions of using tinsel on Christmas trees and including spider-shaped ornaments. Our next topic that we're going to talk about is another kind of silly but interesting tradition that's done in Mexico. This is radish carving at Christmas time. Now, Night of the Radishes is an annual radish carving contest that's held in Oaxaca, New Mexico. Mexico. It's held on December 23rd. This day is known as the Christmas Market, and people carve radishes into people or into scenes to compete against each other in several categories. Now, the most popular category is the traditional category, which is usually biblical scenes or people, or it's traditional Oaxacan traditional categories that usually win these contests. Now, the contest attracts hundreds of people from all over the area. The contest began in colonial times when farmers used the exhibition to lure buyers into the market. Waiting times to even see the event could have you waiting up to 4 to 5 hours. But what's interesting about this is that the contest itself is only a few hours long. Now, this is because of the rotting of radishes. Once you carve them, you have to move very fast or your radish will start to wilt and rot and your carving will get ruined, basically. Competitors have to wait months to enter the contest, and then they have from the 18th to the 23rd to plan their carvings. Now, they can use more than one carving of radishes, and they also can use other types of vegetables to kind of, you know, serve as an additional character or an additional scene, but your main vegetable has to be a radish. The main objective of the contest is to preserve Oaxacan traditions, and the winner of the traditional category could walk away with 15,000 pesos. Isn't that something? So the next topic that I'm going to tell you guys about is the history and the meaning and the symbolism behind evergreens, mistletoe, and holly. I'm going to start off with holly. Holly was adopted in Christianity as a symbol of Jesus' crown of thorns. The crimson berries are a symbol of his blood, and the evergreens are a symbol of life everlasting. In Celtic mythology, holly is associated with peace and goodwill. And our next one we have here is mistletoe. Now, did you guys know that mistletoe is actually a parasite? I had no clue. But this is probably my favorite one to talk about. The history, the symbolism. And, you know, it's just really interesting to learn the history and the meaning behind these wintertime plants. Mistletoe, this plant was used by the Celtic Druids as a fertility symbol in the 1st century AD. It was also thought to ward off evil spirits and could bring good luck to the household. It also began as a sign of love and friendship in Norse mythology. The tradition of kissing under a mistletoe comes from England, especially because of a musical in 1784. The original custom was that a berry was to be plucked from a sprig of mistletoe before a person could be kissed. And then when there was no more berries left on the sprig, there would be no more kissing. Now, this is my favorite part. In Norse mythology, when the guard Baldur was killed with mistletoe, but then he was revived, his mother Frigga was overjoyed and declared that mistletoe was a symbol of love and no longer a weapon, and she promised that anyone who passes underneath mistletoe would get a kiss from her. That's the Norse mythology portion of it in a nutshell. But just for time's sake, we're gonna move on. I could get into it. I really could, but I don't want to keep you guys here for too long. Or maybe if you guys want to hear more about that, let me know, because I would be overjoyed to tell you guys about it. Our next part is evergreens or pine trees. Now, the evergreens were used by Christians as a symbol of everlasting life with God. Fir trees were the first Christmas tree, which started about 1,000 years ago in Northern Europe. And also, they would plant evergreen trees and boxes inside their homes in the wintertime. Also, the fully decorated Christmas tree symbolizes the birth and resurrection of Jesus. And our last topic for tonight's, well, this segment for tonight's episode is the pooper in the poop log at Christmas. In Catalonia, there is a tradition of feeding a hollow log that has sticks and four legs and a smiley face, and it has a red floppy hat. And you would feed this hollow log scraps during the days leading up to Christmas. Then at Christmas, the tradition indicates that you would hit it with a stick and sing a song, and it poops out presents. According to tradition, they are placed in the home with the intention of love and comfort. The poop log originates all the way back to the 18th century and is said to be enchanted with Santa's magic. You can find the pooping log or the cagatillo at Christmas markets across the two main Spanish regions, Catalonia and Aragon. According to the traditional story, cagatillo will show up on a family's doorstep on the 8th of December. Until then, the family and the children are expected to take good care of him until Christmas Day. The children were told to feed him dry pieces of bread, orange peel, or dried beans. Then on Christmas Eve, the pooping log will give the children presents if they take extra good care of him. And that is the end of the crazy and cool Christmas traditions and folklore from all around the world that I found for this year's special Merry Christmas, Christmas Eve podcast edition. I hope you guys liked it. And I will see you in the next segment for my personally written Christmas ghost story. I hope you guys enjoy it. Now, if you guys made it this far, I want to personally thank you. Hope you guys are having a good week, and hope you guys have a great holiday. Now, this is the last segment for tonight's episode, and this is a work of fiction that I have written myself. I hope you guys enjoy it. I wrote it up, you know, thinking about ghosts, thinking about Christmas time. So I hope you guys enjoy this one. This story is called The Endless Night, written by myself, Tori. And I'm going to begin the story. It was the year that Harrison Appleyard found himself a new wife when he saw the ghost of the former Mrs. Appleyard. The year was 1924, and not long after the wedding, Harrison was called out to sea on a recovery mission for a sunken ship. The ship sank just off the coast of California and had been in being from Maine, the traveling time was about 3 weeks to a month. 3 weeks, his lovely new wife would be left alone in a very large estate with only the maids and servants to keep her company. Upon arriving home one evening, after Harrison had received news of the new voyage, he hurriedly ventured up the stairs to tell Christine of his upcoming adventure. She was not as enthusiastic as he, but she sat on their bed and listened to her husband go on about this excellent opportunity. After a moment of silence, Christine asked, "When do you leave?" Harrison whipped his head around and answered her, "The day after tomorrow, November 25th, and then I shall return just before Christmas Day, I believe the 23rd. Harrison turned to his wife and gave her a kiss on the forehead, before descending the staircase and walking into the dining room, where he awaited her arrival for dinner. That evening was eerily dark, and it seemed to have lasted for ages. And the next morning was frigid cold, and even the sun seemed to have a layer of ice over it, shielding everyone and everything from its warmth. On the night of November 24th, Christine personally packed Harrison's luggage and prepared for his departure early in the morning. That day, Harrison kissed Christine goodbye and said, "Before you can even miss me, I'll be back. Try to have fun and go to Everton's farm to pick out a nice big Christmas tree. Decorate it in your favorite colors. I can't wait to see it. It'll be our first Christmas together," Harrison said gleefully. "Oh, and up in the attic are all the ribbons, nutcrackers, and stockings, and some old ornaments that belonged to Margaret. I'm sure she won't mind if you use some. After all, she loved Christmas," he said with a melancholy smile. He then picked up the luggage off the floor and made his way to the docks where his precious ship awaited him. Her name was Eugenia Victoria, and she could travel 12 knots and had the capacity to hold over 100 people. Once at sea, a crew member approached Captain Appleyard and asked him, "How's the wife? Did you tell her of the grave details of our excursion?" The man said with a grin, "Oh no, I've told her all the gory details. We're bringing back bodies, not survivors. They say there should be at least 30 to 40 deceased still on that ship, somehow, in the vicinity of the ship. It'll be a glorious sight. Prepare for that, my boy," Captain Appleyard said. Once night had fallen, it was time for the crew and the captain to retire to the dining room for dinner, and a skeleton crew was employed to keep watch during as the evening progressed. When Harrison retired to his cabin for the night, and well after he fell into a deep sleep, he dreamt of Margaret. It was nothing ghastly or ghoulish. He saw her as if she were still alive, dressed in a pale blue cotton gown with embroidery. Her long, deep golden brown hair was blown wild as she swung on a swing in a bright beam of sunlight. She laughed joyfully as she swung, and when she turned to him, she beckoned him to come to her. As he approached her, however, he could feel the warmth of the sun on his face and the summertime breeze on his flesh. Suddenly, Margaret stopped swinging and glanced at him. She had not said anything, but she held out her hand as if she was waiting for something to be placed into it, something that was her own. When he gave her a quizzical look, her hand dropped to her side and she slowly faded away. The dream ended, and Harrison woke with panic and confusion. He had not dreamt of his late wife in years, until now. He rose from his bed and walked to the bathroom, where he splashed some cold water on his face. Then he put on his heavy wool coat and ventured to the outside deck. He was gazing into the sea when general malaise and a deafening silence fell over the deep blue sky. Harrison could feel the touch he had placed on Margaret's hand still on his fingers. Just off in the distance, at the very end of the deck, stood a figure. He stared at it, as it stood completely still. He did not recognize it as any of the crew. So who was it? Concerned it might have been a stowaway, Captain Appleyard approached the figure. But as he walked toward it, the silhouette diminished into thin air. Nobody was there, however. He could smell the sweet scent of honeysuckle in the air, which, strangely enough, was his wife's perfume. An hour later, he returned to his cabin to try to fall back asleep. Over the next few days, nothing out of the ordinary happened on the ship. Harrison was sleeping sound, and no ghostly figures appeared to him in the night. Still, however, while at home in Maine, Captain Appleyard's wife was laying in bed, in terror. Over the course of the night of December 18th, Christine had the misfortune of seeing an apparition of a woman with long brown hair standing over her while she slept, only to awaken, terrified. Strangely, over the course of the few days while Harrison was on voyage, Christine would hear the sound of ornaments being thrown off the Christmas tree at night. With the maids and servants asleep, and she herself already in bed, she could not come up with a logical explanation. Furthermore, most of the ornaments that were broken were the new burgundy and bronze-colored bulbs that she had just bought. The only decorations that were spared were the trinkets that belonged to Margaret. One morning, as Christine swept up only more broken glass from yet another broken decoration, she noticed that her wedding ring was missing. She knew she had the ring on when she went to sleep, but now it was gone. She was sure that she had not taken it off, and it surely did not slip off, as it was a bit tight on the finger. It was originally Margaret's wedding band. One of the servants entered the living room. Christine turned to her, asking, "Have you seen my wedding ring, Lottie?" To this, Lottie shook her head and muttered something underneath her breath, something about the mess that was still on the floor. As Christine walked into the study, she was met by a large, ornate, framed picture of Margaret, and underneath it was a heavy oak cabinet. Intuition told Christine to open the cabinet, and there inside it was the ring. There was a heavy presence in the room with her, although it was difficult to place, as she was truly alone in the study. "I found my ring. It was in the study. You best tell me if you are fooling with me, Lottie." Christine confronted her. Lottie profusely denied anything to do with the incident. Lottie then added, "Maybe she's come back for her ring, the original Mrs. Appleyard. She never left. She'll also stay here forever, until the end of time, as long as you have her ring." Christine shuddered at the thought, but perhaps she was right. "Lottie, have you seen Margaret in the house, after she died? Her ghost, if you will?" she asked. "Oh, yes, Mrs. I always hear her walking up and down the stairs, and I can hear her voice. Sometimes outside of my door, in your bedroom," Lottie confessed. "Do you understand what she says?" Lottie shook her head again. "Thought I heard her say something about Captain Appleyard, like she was talking to him. I think I did hear her say, 'I love you,' and say, 'You'll remember me.' Also, I heard her crying a few times as well. She did die during childbirth. A daughter was born, and they were going to name her Laura Bell. The child died after 1 hour," Lottie informed Christine. She gazed up at the portrait for a while. "You won't be forgotten," Christine whispered. Since then, as the next week or so passed, the spirit of Margaret seemed to have moved on, and there were no more shattered Christmas ornaments nor ghostly visitors at Christine's bedside. Everything seemed to be peaceful and hopeful, as Captain Appleyard was due to return in just 3 more days. It was now December 20th, and thankfully the recovery mission was a grim success, with only 25 bodies to be collected from the ship. The voyage home has now begun. While Captain Appleyard was still making his voyage home, a thick blanket of white snow had covered the land in Maine. Christine awoke to the beautiful, pristine, glimmering whiteness of freshly fallen snow, so pure and virgin. But strangely, as she walked around the gardens of her home, she saw something very strange. There seemed to be footprints of a lady walking around in the rose gardens, and it were not hers, and it were none of the maids. Perhaps they were one of the mothers of the children who like to visit their gardens in the wintertime to play and make snowballs and build snowmen. Christine nodded it off as that, and went back inside to finish lighting the fire to keep our house warm. But still there was a draft in the air, an icy coldness, as if all but one of the windows was still open. She could still feel that all too familiar presence of Margaret still in the room with her. She looked about the room and saw no one, but she did distinctly smell this scent of honeysuckle perfume. She spoke out to the spirit of Margaret and said, "Listen, I know who you are. Listen to me, and I know what you want, but I'm here now. I am Harrison's wife now. I'm not going anywhere. You're not going to scare me out of my home. But I promise you, you will not be forgotten. But you are not going to make me leave. I shall honor you in each way I can, every day. You must move on, and you must leave this place. Move towards light and be with God. You are not welcome here anymore. Go to heaven. Move on. Leave this home. You are not welcome here anymore." Just then, as she finished her sentence, a picture frame containing a photograph of both her and Harrison had fallen off of the table and clattered to the floor, with broken glass shattering over Christine's face. This time she spoke out to the spirit again, this time more angrily. "He's waited long enough. You've been dead for years. What's he supposed to do? Live his life alone? I'm sorry that he moved on, and his heart needed to mend. But you are dead." She took a brief moment to pause and reflect on her thoughts. She needed to relax and calm down. She then asked one more question to the spirit of Margaret Appleyard. "What do you want? Do you want this ring back?" "I'll give it back to you," she said to the spirit. She ventured over to the study again. She peered up at the great ornate portrait of Margaret, raised up her hand and held out the ring to her, and said, "I give this back to you," and she placed it into the drawer in the cabinet just below the portrait, and walked out of the room. The room fell silent, and the tension had eased. The energy was now calm and collected. By the time it was evening, it was eerily silent and still, but heavy. Heavy atmosphere filled the room. But Christine felt so exhausted and drained that she actually fell asleep in her day clothes and her hair still tied up in a neat little bun. She also felt the feeling of general malaise and uneasiness as she slept. She awoke at around midnight after having a horrible nightmare. She dreamt of her husband's former wife, Margaret. She saw her standing in the lawn of her house, standing there in the tall snow, wearing a white gown with a red cape. She stood there silently, as still as pond water. Frightened, Christine slammed the door shut and ran into her bedroom. Worse then, she was met again with the spirit of Margaret as she stood at her bedside. Again she said nothing, but she still held out her hand, as if waiting for something to be placed inside her palm. Her gaze terrified Christine. She asked the spirit, "What do you want?" And there was no answer. Only silence. As she waited for the spirit to answer her, she waited to wake herself up. She closed her eyes as tight as she could and she pinched her own arm, but she couldn't wake up. As she opened her eyes again, she found the ghost hovering over her with deranged eyes, staring deep into her emerald green eyes. The spirit still said nothing. So Christine decided to close her eyes once more, and once she opened them again, the spirit was gone. The dream had ended, and Christine had woken in a terrified panic. She also felt a very strange burning sensation on her wrist, and as she inspected her wrist, she found that there were 3 scratch marks on the inside of her arm. They were raw and they were bloody, and she quickly had one of the maidservants tend to her wounds. And as, once again, she found that her wedding ring was missing from her finger. So she ventured into the study to find that she did not place the ring in the cupboard where she had left it earlier that evening. But she did find it on the nightstand beside her bed, placed inside a vase. And it made her wonder to herself, did the ghost of Margaret Appleyard just want her wedding ring back? But how was she supposed to give it back to her? Was she supposed to physically put the ring back on her lifeless, dead hand in her graveyard, open the crypt, open her casket, and return the ring to her physically? Perhaps so. On the morning of the 23rd, the early morning of December 23rd, Captain Appleyard made his final stretch home to Maine to find his lovely young wife frightened and terrified. Over the course of the days between the 18th and the 23rd of December, it seemed that Christine Appleyard had gone mad. Her hair had started to fall out. Her eyes were big and glassy. There were some rogue stray gray hairs in her natural blonde bed of hair. And her eyes that were once bright and happy were now dim and dead. During the afternoon of December 23rd, Christine Appleyard sat melancholy on the couch in the living room. When Lottie entered the room, she solemnly asked Lottie, "Where is the former Mrs. Appleyard buried?" Lottie gave her a strange look and stammered, I don't know. You're going to have to ask Captain Appleyard." To this, Christine responded, "Well, I have to know. I have to give her back her ring. She will not leave me alone. She will not let me rest. I need to give her ring back to her. It was hers before it was mine. And now she wants it back. She torments me. Please tell me where she is buried. You have to know. Somebody has to know. I can't wait much longer. I'm afraid I shall go mad if I don't know." Lottie briefly left the room for a moment. She then returned and said, "I will ask Mr. Winston if he knows. Captain Appleyard usually tells him these things and he helps him with the funerary plans back in the day. This was years ago, so I barely remember anything. But let me see if I can ask him, and I will tell you if he tells me anything important." And with that, Lottie left the room and left Christine in silence. Her eyes darted across the room as if waiting for the spirit to make a return. She didn't hear anything, she didn't see anything, but she still waited for a Christmas ornament to go flying off the Christmas tree, for a voice to beckon her out of the distance, to see an apparition of a deranged woman in the corner of the room, holding out her hand, waiting for her wedding ring to be returned to her. But it didn't happen. Nothing happened. It was just a young woman maddening in the silence of a living room. Meanwhile, back at sea, Captain Appleyard was still plagued by the sweet memories that played in his dreams of his former wife, Margaret Appleyard. It seemed every night, over the past couple days, he had dreamt of Margaret, and reminded of the sweet times that he used to have all those years ago. Once again, after having a dream about Margaret, he woke up in a sweaty panic and rushed into his restroom. He splashed cold water on his face and looked at himself in a mirror. All those years ago when he was a bright young man, and now he was an older gentleman with streaks of silver in his hair, and his eyes were not once so bright. His beard had become gray and long and coarse, and his hands were rough. However, tonight, in his bathroom, he continued to smell the sweet scent of her perfume, filling the air. He looked around the room, and to see there was no one, not a soul with him, especially not a woman. He could feel her presence, as if she was actually in the room with him. And once again, he walked out into the deck, but he saw no one. The only people he saw was a skeleton crew, staring at him, confused, and some were mocking him as he stared off into the sea. He then returned back into his cabin and pretended he was asleep, trying to trick the spirit of his former wife to visiting him while he was still awake, so he could know if he was going mad, or if he was dreaming, or if this was some type of new reality. Hours went by, and still no sign of Margaret. But however, there was a disembodied voice that seemed to call out to him. And it said, "She's digging up my grave." It was a woman's voice. Harrison couldn't decipher if it was Margaret's voice, but it did sound similar. The voice was harsh and shrill, but it did almost sound like Margaret, only somehow distorted. It repeated again, "She's digging up my grave." "Who is?" he responded, but to that there was no answer. Once again, silence fell into the room, and Harrison fell into a deep sleep. The sun awoken him as it was shining brightly through his window. He pulled on his coat and ventured out into the deck. It was finally the final stretch home. By this time, he would be home by the evening, just in time for Christmas, and just in time to happily greet his lovely new wife. Christine, who was now venturing to the cemetery, St. Paul's Cemetery, where Margaret Appleyard was buried. She snuck in through the gate in the mask of the darkness. She, along with a young boy she employed to dig up the grave, as she bribed the boy with a $20 bill, and he brought along a shovel to help her dig up the grave of former Mrs. Appleyard. While they dug her up, the both of them assisted the opening of the crypt, which they were met with a skeleton of Margaret, still dressed in a pale blue gown with embroidery. Christine struggled to get the wedding ring off of her finger and slipped it onto the bony finger of Margaret. She then silently closed the coffin lid, and she left the boy to rebury the body of her husband's former wife. "Thank you," she said to the boy. The boy silently nodded, and as she also placed her hand on his shoulder and said, "Say not a word of any of this to Captain Appleyard or to anyone that you know, all right? Promise me you won't." He then again nodded his head and said nothing. She left the cemetery and prayed that the spirit of Margaret had moved on. When she entered her home, it was evening, and it was completely dark. Captain Appleyard should be returning home soon, as it was about 6 p.m., which gave her an hour to prepare dinner and get ready for her husband's returns. By around 7 o'clock in the evening, Captain Appleyard had returned home. He gleefully ran up the steps and to the front door. As he was about to open the door, he heard a strange voice again, the same strange voice that beckoned him in the ship just earlier that day. But this time, it sounded more like Margaret than anything else. It said to him, "Promise that you won't forget about me. Promise that you'll always remember me. And I will love you until the end of time." Captain Appleyard stopped for a moment. Tears filled his eyes, and he slowly ventured into his home. The atmosphere in the home felt different. It was lighter, it was brighter, and it was all around happier. He was met by his beautiful wife, Christine, who was joyfully waiting for him in the living room. He was met by the bright lights of the Christmas tree, done in golds and bronze and burgundies. It was absolutely beautiful. Joy filled the room. As he hugged and kissed Christine, hello. He was finally home. And it was going to be a bright Christmas and a happy new year, once and for all. And through the years, Christine kept her promise to honor Margaret Appleyard each and every day until the day she died in 1974. Captain Appleyard died in 1980. And still to this day, the portrait of Margaret Appleyard is still hung in the study, with a vase of honeysuckles down below it to honor her favorite flower and her memory. So that concludes the ending of tonight's episode, a very special episode. Merry Christmas to all, happy holidays to all, stay safe, be merry, be good to each other, be kind to one another, stay safe, make good choices, and I'll see you next week for an all-new episode of Demimonde Paranormal Podcast Edition. And if you're not already, you can become a member of the private paranormal group on Facebook.com named Demimonde Paranormal. We are a private paranormal group, which means you can feel free to post anything paranormal and come out and talk about your experiences or what you would like to experience, maybe, and ask questions. And feel free to ask whatever you want. There's no right or wrong questions or answers. There's no judgments. And it's just a safe place for everybody to talk about everything paranormal and supernatural. Once again, I'm Tori from Demimonde Paranormal. We drop each and every new Friday, we drop a new episode on something supernatural. That includes ghosts, witches, hauntings, vampires, werewolves, you name it. The Mothman, Bigfoot, anything supernatural, we'll cover it here on this podcast. And with that being said, I wish you guys a good night, and I will see you next Friday. But until then, stay spooky.